Srimati Radharani had made some pan for Krishna, and she put it into his mouth, while Chandravali and Lalita massaged Krishna's feet. Some of the gopis fanned Krishna, some held more pan, some had containers to catch pieces of pan which might fall from his mouth. Others had containers of water, some sang songs, some recited prayers. Others conversed with him in very pleasant ways. And he reciprocated by giving them all pan which he had chewed, but in such ways that none of them could see that he was giving it to any other of them. So then Krishna made some gesture to them with his eyebrows, indicating, "I'll meet with you shortly," and then rolled over to go to sleep. So Sridham took Sarup to his house, because that is Sarup's house also, their brothers. And in the morning, actually that night, Sarup couldn't sleep. He was just thinking of seeing Krishna again. The next morning, early, he and Sridham went to see Krishna. Krishna was totally wiped out. He was completely devastated on the bed. Mother Yashoda was trying to wake him up. He was showing signs of conjugal pastimes. But Mother Yashoda was misunderstanding, misreading these signs. The gopis were there. They had just come back from having pastimes with him all night. They were feeling embarrassed and fearful. Will Mother Yashoda figure out what we have been up to? But no problem, she didn't figure it out, because she's seeing everything from her motherly perspective. She thought he was so tired still, because he had used so much energy herding the cows very enthusiastically all day. He just completely wiped himself out. She didn't know he'd been up all night dancing like mad. She thought that thorns had cut his body when he went deep into the forest, but actually it was the fingernails of the gopis. He thought that the kajal from his eyes had smeared all over his body, but it was the kajal from the gopis' eyes. She thought that pan juice from his mouth had smeared all over him, but it was actually from the lips of the gopis. And that his garland and necklace had broken while he was rolling in his sleep, but actually they broke while he was dancing and having other pastimes with the gopis. She thought that the kumkum from the breasts of the gopis was colored dust from the shore of the Yamuna. Then she chastised the gopis. They thought, she's figured it out. And she said, "You girls did not decorate him properly last night. Otherwise, things wouldn't have become so messed up like this." And then they realized they had not been caught, so they smiled. So then Krishna prepared to take the cows to the fields. When Krishna finally dragged himself out of bed, having had maybe 15 minutes sleep the whole night, Mother Yashoda dressed and decorated him and made him eat. After he ate, she forced him to take a little rest. But then he just had a little chat with the gopis for a while. They just kind of forced their way in as usual. Mother Yashoda got the gopis to sing auspicious songs, carry auspicious things like water pots and so on and so forth in preparation for an auspicious leaving by Krishna. Then Mother Yashoda put auspicious herbs and ointments and ornaments on Krishna and Balaram's limbs. She got a lot of older ladies to give benedictions and blessings, and got Krishna to perform some rituals for his, to create auspiciousness for his excursion. Krishna took his lunchbox, called the cows to stand up, and set out with the cows in front, playing his flute. All his friends gathered, playing flutes, bugles, buffalo horns. Some of them had blades of grass, and they were blowing on those blades of grass. I don't know if you know how to do that, making some noise like that. So it was an amazing sound, all these instruments. Balaram was in the front, Sarup at the back, and the gopis were following on some pretext. So then Mother Yashoda saw that Krishna's face had already started perspiring. So she wiped his face dry and followed him to the edge of the village. So Krishna told Mother Yashoda, "All right, Mata, you can go back now." Mother Yashoda turned around, took two or three steps back, and stopped, and turned around again. She came back. She quickly got some pan and gave it to Krishna. And Krishna told her, "Thank you, Mata. You can go back now." She turned to go back, but then she turned around to follow Krishna again. This time she made him eat some fruits and sweets and also have something to drink. And then she turned back, back to the house again. But again she turned around and followed Krishna. This time she adjusted Krishna's clothing and turned around to go back. But she turned around and followed Krishna again. This time she gave him some instructions. "Now don't go too far into that forest. Don't go into the parts where there are thorns. Watch out for the stones." These types of instructions. She beseeched him again and again, and then turned around and went back, but turned back and came back to Krishna. Every time Krishna is moving a few steps, and Mother Yashoda is coming. So, then she said, she told the boys, "Balaram, you stay in the front. Sridham and Sarup, you stay in the back, behind Krishna. Subal, you stay on Krishna's left. Angsu, you stay on Krishna's right." So in this way, going back and forth, her concern exceeded that of a cow with a newborn calf. Just completely transfixed on Krishna. Finally, Krishna bowed at her feet, embraced her, and turned her back with strong statements. So she stood and watched, motionless like a picture, until he had entered the forest. Then the gopis became so choked up, they couldn't sing any longer. Their feet were stumbling, their eyes were blocked with tears. But unlike Mother Yashoda, who had agreed to stop when told to by Krishna, They would not agree. So they followed Krishna further. But due to social considerations, they couldn't really express themselves completely, but at least they followed him. And he repeatedly told them, stop. Don't do like this. Go back. I'll meet you later. Finally, he made faces at them, shaking his head, biting his tongue at them. And then they stopped and joined his mother. Then Nanda Maharaj came, and he followed Krishna even further, accompanied by various of his ministers and brothers and other assistants. There were many auspicious omens, but still Nanda Maharaj was concerned and followed Krishna. Then Krishna reminded Nanda Maharaj that you have many important duties to perform, so you should go back. Just go back. So Nanda Maharaj turned back and just stood still, looking after Krishna until he had gone into the forest, until all the sounds that he and the boys were making had disappeared, and they'd really gone deep into the forest. Then Nanda Maharaj engaged messengers to go back and forth, bringing news, you know, every half hour or every 15 minutes or so, bringing news, what had Krishna done in the last 15 minutes or half an hour. So this program was going on. But he and Mother Yashoda and the gopis, they all went back to the village and spent the whole day just thinking about Krishna in separation. Sarupa is finding it very difficult to explain all this to the Brahman, to Janasharma. And he tells him that only someone with infinite capacity would be able to attempt such a description as this. Others would find it too much. So Krishna was feeling tremendous separation, particularly from the gopis, but also Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. But as he went deeper into the forest, playing with the boys, he became absorbed in their pastimes and sort of forgot about the other things and just became absorbed there. But later he prepared for meeting the gopis in the evening. So this is a general introduction to the sixth chapter. Well, actually it's the first half of the sixth chapter. But now we're going to hear, tomorrow we're going to hear about the extraordinary love of the inhabitants of Goloka and just the extraordinary qualifications and characteristics of the inhabitants of Goloka, and particularly though their extraordinary love for Krishna. And then we'll hear some very extraordinary pastimes where their love for Krishna is demonstrated so vividly. It's just astonishing. And in this way, it is established very clearly that Goloka is the topmost abode, and the inhabitants of Goloka are the topmost of all devotees. Any comments or questions? Is how does day and night occur in Goloka Vrindavan? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says his abode is not illumined by sun or moon. It happens. That was one of the things that Gopakumar, when he was Gopakumar still, first noticed, that the sun was passing through the sky and time was passing. So, in order to enhance the pastimes, even though that place is not subject to those things. But still those things are there to enhance the pastimes and divide the pastimes like that and give some sort of sequence to the pastimes. Yeah. So it is happening like that. Although it's not, the place is not dependent, but those things are still, place is not dependent on those things, but still, because everything is self-effulgent, but still, these things are working like that for the sake of ordering the pastimes. Yeah. Kedai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing on with chapter 6 of the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and we just finished discussing some pastimes at home with Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, and then Krishna taking the cows to the fields. Now, the next section is dealing with some philosophical considerations in regard to these pastimes. And there are three parts to that. One is a brief discussion about the bliss of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Then there's a discussion about the incarnations of the Lord's associates. How the Lord's associates incarnate. That's an interesting subject. And then there is another brief discussion about the extraordinary love that the inhabitants of Goloka Vrindavan have for Krishna, particularly the gopis. So there are three elements or little subsections here in this section, which is dealing with some important philosophical considerations regarding these pastimes. So the first part is about the bliss of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, of Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal associates of the Lord. Just a brief discussion is there about how, even though Nandishvara, Nandagram, the main town where the palace of Nanda Maharaj is, even though that is extraordinarily opulent and even far more opulent than Dwaraka, what to speak of Ayodhya and what to speak of Vaikuntha, far more opulent and in that way, in a certain sense, attractive. But the people, the devotees, are not attracted to it. They are attracted to the fields and the forests. Yes, you may recall that in Dwaraka, After a little while, some of the well-meaning devotees approached Gopakumar and said, "Look, you look too kind of crude, ethnic, rustic. You should get some good city clothes." So they're in a city mood. And there's some influence, spiritual influence of spiritual opulence. But in Goloka Vrindavan, the devotees are not interested really in Nandishvara, even though it is far more opulent than even Dwaraka. They're attracted to the forests and fields. Why is that? Because that is where Krishna's favorite pastimes take place. That is where Krishna gets his most pleasure. And they are just attached to that. Therefore, they're more attached to the forests and the fields. That's one part of it. It's just a brief discussion. The other part is that some very intelligent people say that the bliss of Vaikuntha is considerably higher than the bliss of impersonal liberation. Others say that the bliss of Ayodhya is higher than that. And we can understand that's true because, of course, in both Vaikuntha and Ayodhya, Ayodhya, after all, is part of Vaikuntha. So servitude, dasya-ras, is the predominant mellow. But in Ayodhya, it is more fixed. The devotees are more fixed in their dasya-ras than they are in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, there's also the influence of some neutrality, passiveness, just appreciating the greatness of the Lord. Although actually dasya-ras is generally pervading. But in Ayodhya, it is much more strongly pervading, the dasya-ras. So therefore, there is an increase in the sweetness. Or at least, there is some sweetness. In Vaikuntha, there's not really sweetness. What is that sweetness? Where does it come from? It comes from the fact that Krishna, even though he is so great, but he is so pleasant and nice and personal. That's the influence of Yoga Maya. So actually Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that in Vaikuntha there is no Yoga Maya. In the sense of that spiritually deluding energy which makes one forget that Krishna is God, forget that he is so great and so powerful and so grand. So in Vaikuntha there is no Yoga Maya, so there is not really sweetness so much. But everyone is very impressed and very formal, reverential mood. They're worshipping the Lord. But in Ayodhya, there is some sweetness. And we gave an example of that. Do you remember the example we gave? Yes, that's it. Lord Ram embraced Hanuman. This is an act of sweetness. This is not an act of greatness and power and magnificence. This is an act of affection, very personal. So in Ayodhya, the devotees are more fixed in servitude, and on a higher level, at least the higher level is manifest sometimes, so there are elements of sweetness. And in Dwaraka, those people who understand, they say that in Dwaraka there's even more pleasure. Because friendship and even some vatsalya ras and even smaller amounts, but some conjugal rasa. So sweetness is definitely considerably more prominent in Dwarika. But they say that the bliss of Goloka Vrindavan is higher still. It transcends reason. Therefore, it cannot be expressed in words. And Sarup says, Gopakumar is now Sarup, don't forget that. He says, only those who live there can understand it. So it looks like we'll have to go there. That's the end of the message. I mean, Maharaj Parikshit tells his mother, so you're going to have to go there. Do whatever you can, but just go there somehow. Yes. So that bliss in Goloka Vrindavan is higher than the bliss in Dwarika. So high it transcends reason and any attempt to describe it with words, and only those who live there can understand it. And even they can't really understand it, but at least they can understand it better than anyone else. So then the next part of the discussion, philosophical discussion, is about how the eternal associates of the Lord incarnate. Is about how the eternal associates of the Lord incarnate. Is interesting. Now, of course, we know already that the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnates, and that Srimati Radharani goes with him and incarnates in suitable forms. In so many suitable forms. But also, the eternal associates in Vaikuntha, they are the main eternal associates, are incarnations of the Goloka Vrindavan devotees. The example is given of Subal. In Vaikuntha, he is Garuda. Yes. Subal. He's a cowherd boy, very intimate cowherd boyfriend of Krishna in Vrindavan. But just like Srimati Radharani, who wants to be with her Lord, wherever he goes, whatever he does, so Subal also, and various others. They do that, and they can do that. So Subal becomes Garuda in Vaikuntha. Then Lord Vishnu is there amongst the demigods, so the eternal associates incarnate amongst the demigods also. So Subal amongst the demigods becomes Garuda again. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sridham. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It's not Subal, actually. It's Sridharma. So, when they appear in Vaikuntha, they're called reflections, Pratibimba. When they appear amongst the demigods, they're called shadows, Pratichaya. Chaya, of course, means shadow. Dehe Mora Pada Chaya. Give us the shade of your lotus feet. We sing every day. So Chaya means shadow, Pratichaya. And the senses, of course, it's quite easy to understand, that when you look in the mirror, that's your reflection. And even though the shadow is sort of the same thing, but it's not as precise as the mirror image. And the mirror image, of course, you know, is very convincing, but it's not really the same as the actual person. So the example is given, an example is given of Nanda Maharaj, that he appears amongst the demigods as one of the Vasus called Drona. You may have heard this. Yes, this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Nanda Maharaj was an incarnation of Drona. This is not obviously Dronacharya, but he's a demigod.